We're way, way down at 250 million. So we could more than double our current spend and still sit within the existing salary cap.
It's easy to forget, mate. Olympiakos' European journey this season started in the Europa League. Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, dust has settled now. Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 2. All in all, maybe felt like 2 points dropped, but I think after the North London derby, mate, this has, you know, probably been reaffirmed as a point gained, hasn't it, mate? But before we get into all that, how are you doing?
Oh, good, man. I'm very well. It's, it was a bit of a tricky one. You know, you and I kind of mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation that, you know, we do struggle to keep a clean sheet in games at home. And you and I both kind of mentioned it as a bit of a something to keep an eye on. It wasn't really something that Villa should be that worried about, kind of a blip on the radar, if you will. But kind of as we've gone on and the kind of season has progressed, it has become more and more into something that's kind of becoming a bit of an Achilles heel, I want to say. Obviously, you know, we kind of did the same against Brentford, and where, you know, we had a 2-goal lead and we threw it away. Thankfully, we rescued a point out of this one. And then, yeah, again, we dropped points from our winning position. We made, even when we're winning games, we sometimes just concede a goal and make it harder. You only have to look at the Lille game, for example, again, where we were 2-0 up. If we'd have gone into that away leg with a 2-goal lead, I dare say that it, like, completely changes the complexion of the tie and makes that evening in France maybe a little easier. So, yeah, I think it is interesting to see that this does keep cropping up. We're probably no longer this kind of strong, stalwart defensive unit that we were maybe even kind of 12 months ago. That kind of has faded, and it has become a bit of an unwanted habit for the Villa that we're making these home games a lot harder than they need to be.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget that without Boubacar Kamara, you know, just screening that back four, things are going to be more difficult, aren't they? And when you look at, you know, we've fielded, it seems like every other week when Moreno was fit, we've alternated between Dean and him. Longley has stepped in, Carlos has stepped in, Konsa's been right back centre half as well. So it's one of them. I think, you know, a solid midfield does make all the difference, and we've had that. Tentatively, you know, Yuri and Dougie have and Guinea have all played excellently in you know, the past couple of weeks, and sort of stepped up where they needed to. But I mean, obviously, we've sort of lost Yuri through injury now. Same with Emmy. We should probably go through the good parts about this game first, really, mate, shouldn't we? I mean, first of all, It's a great start, isn't it? Get a bit fortunate with the own goal, I guess. There was a lot of talk about the ball being out of play, and that's what they were sort of looking at. And, I mean, it was just generally a shocking performance from the referee. I personally didn't see that myself. But I guess that kind of is what it is, mate. But, you know, you start so strong so early on, and then obviously despite ending the half at 2-0, Chelsea still had the share of possession, shots, all that. You know, they were dominating those metrics. Were we looking to hold on, mate? Do you think that was the sort of plan here all along? Just get a goal, get two goals and try and coast through?
I think, yeah. I mean, there can be absolutely no doubt that we were a lot more passive after the second goal goes in. And I can't help but feel that it's because we have one eye on Thursday. I mean, it's not a huge sample size, but, you know, the collapse against Brentford in virtually identical circumstances was the weekend before the home game against Lille. And so, you know, is it a coincidence that, yeah, just a few weeks later, here we are dropping a 2-goal lead after really taking our eye off the ball in the second half with one eye on a European home knockout game on the Thursday? I mean, it's, as I say, it's either a coincidence, it's only two games, but I do kind of find it interesting that it's a pattern that's starting to emerge. And even if you go kind of back further than this, if you look at the Luton game away from home, where, again, I think we had a 2-goal lead in that game, and then they called it back to 2-2, and then Luka Dean scored the winner. We had Ajax that Thursday. And so maybe that's the trend. Maybe that's we're going to drop this back to 80, 70%, try and see this out, make sure that it's not as heavy on the legs as perhaps it could be. And you just can't really do that in the Premier League. And I dare say that it's not something that we want to do. But yeah, as you kind of touched on, with all the injuries that we have, we don't have incredible squad depth. You're kind of forced into that, to be honest with you, in that you probably can't rotate as much as you like. So you have to make sure that those guys that are going to play a lot of minutes, you just make it easier for them as possible. But the problem is that it doesn't really matter who you're playing. It's always going to be difficult to do that. And then, yeah, I mean, if you look at the game against Spurs, you know, 4-0, we lose at home. We had European football that Thursday. And one thing I will say is that by and large, we've done a very good job of turning it around for that midweek fixture. So obviously, after the game against Brentford, we go and win 2-1 against Lille. After the Luton game, we went and go away to Ajax. Okay, it was a 0-0, but not a bad result. After the Spurs game, we turn it around and win 4-0 against Ajax at home. So there is always that turnaround, but I don't think it is a coincidence, really, when you look at it, mate, that a lot of the more intriguing, certainly second half performances this season have preceded a European game on the Thursday.
Yeah, you're right. And it's only, I think the Spurs game is the only European game that we've actually lost only league game that we've lost after playing the Thursday. So generally, when you look at the results, it has been managed correctly. It's obviously fair to say, but as you say, it's going to be difficult. And you're sort of seeing so many different tweets that people are putting out with like the players that are going to be available for this next game. And you're thinking, geez, like we thought we were sort of bare bones before. Now with Emi and Yuri out, it looks just that little bit worse, doesn't it? But, you know, I mean, 2 weeks ago, Morgan Rogers from me was Zinedine Zidane. The week after, he was Yaya Toure. This week, he's Kylian Mbappe, mate, isn't he? The signature Mbappe finish, that near post nutmeg, beat the keeper at the near post. Absolutely well. Even does the celebration, obviously. Reclaimed his little cold celebration, which, you know, Cole Palmer did say a couple months ago now that he took inspiration directly from Morgan. And then hit us with the Mbappe stare as well afterwards, didn't he? Like, that it was ice cold. As each game passes, it's just remarkable how, and we keep saying it, he keeps getting better. Like, every performance is better. And I think there was a lot that he was trying in this game that didn't necessarily happen for him, but the confidence he got when he sort of broke through, managed to get that goal, just looked absolutely unplayable in that space that he occupies. And I dare say we're going to see a fair few finishes like this. I think he's really been practicing and refining the art of the Mbappe near post, hasn't he, mate?
Yeah, it's a great, it's a real confidence finish. Yeah. It's a real confidence finish. You know, you have to have so much belief in your abilities, what you're about to do. You know that it's something that you've practiced on the training ground to try and execute that, because, you know, if you're struggling for goals, if you're desperate in that situation, you open your body up, and as 90% of players would do in that situation, you try and find the far corner. But he's just moving with such confidence at the moment that he's able to kind of, lock those hips, bring his body inwards and fire it into the near post. And it's such an acute angle that he's got to try and find. And the risk is that much more because the technique is so difficult to make sure that you don't drag it and it dribbles past the near post. It's a fantastic finish. And he's really, really becoming someone that we can almost hang our hat on now, to be honest with you. I think particularly when you mentioned how, you know, depleted the squad is at the moment, having someone like Morgan Rogers who's stepping up again and again in these moments, and whilst you don't want to attribute too much responsibility to young shoulders, early doors, what you can do is start to paint a picture of, okay, yeah, like if this guy is good for 2, maybe 3 more goals between now and the end of the season, considering the games that we have to play, particularly if he can get one in Europe, it would just be amazing. It's it's not impossible to imagine. And you, like, I think the pathway that Morgan Rodgers has been on, you know, you and I have spoken about it, that it surprised even us how quickly he's adapted and how quickly he's playing with such confidence in this Villa side. But yeah, like, when you kind of look at the squad getting thinner and thinner, he is one of those players, along with, you know, Bailey, obviously Watkins, guys like that, that you look at and you go, well, yeah, there's a real goal threat there. If he's on the pitch, we've got a chance. And, you know, I didn't expect this season, maybe even not next season. You know, that's something that, you know, after one, look how long it took someone like Leo Bailey, you know, 2 or 3 years it's taken him to get to the stage. Morgan Rodgers has done it in a matter of months. And yeah, I mean, you're kind of, what more can you say? It's been absolutely exceptional, man.
It has, mate. It has. That's 3 goals now for Aston Villa in 3 consecutive home games. So hopefully he can make that 4 on Thursday night. But we'll come to Thursday in a little bit, mate. In terms of, like, the Chelsea goals, just to sort of briefly touch on them before we sort of move on, I think it's, the Madueke goal is unfortunate. And I think, I think a lot of people have sort of got it twisted, like, the performance. I don't necessarily think it was a great performance, don't get me wrong. It certainly wasn't bad. The plan was clearly to concede possession, let Chelsea have that, and for us to conserve our energy. And I think we've shown a lot of times throughout the season that we can kill teams off later on in games, and that is the plan. Like, I specifically looking back at the Lille away game, mate, the way we managed that game to make sure we could get through extra time and have the running power. And yeah, of course, we didn't win the game, but we made it through to the penalty shootout. I look at that and I think, yeah, like, this is the sign of a really fit squad that is willing to fight till the very end. And we've seen that with the amount of late goals that we've scored so far this season to tie games, to even win games as well. So as frustrating as it can be to not necessarily have a grip of the game when you're at home, which I totally empathise with, the mood just totally changed within the stadium when Madueke got that goal. There was so much frustration. And, I mean, they picked our pockets. It was a mistake that was sort of made, that, you know, we made ourselves. We weren't quick enough playing the ball out, I think, as well. One thing that you do have to consider is Robin Olsen coming on, and this isn't to slander Robin Olsen at all. It's never ideal making a goalkeeper change, but getting used to the pace of the game, finding his range with passing, you know, his distribution wasn't brilliant in this game. But, you know, with all that being said, Dougie was careless in possession. And then I think it's Palmer dispossesses him, Madueke ends up scoring, is what it is. And then, I mean, the Gallagher strike's just a fantastic goal, isn't it, mate? There's not really a fat lot you can do other than concentrate a little better for both of the goals, really, is there?
No, I think, you know, you've kind of summarised the first one perfectly. The second one is, you know, you can kind of, you know, like on broadcast, they were saying that, you know, the Villa, we did stand up kind of Gallagher, and we did almost kind of dare him to shoot. There's 3, maybe even 4 Villa fans kind of around him as he approached the box, and we're kind of backing off and backing off. But I feel like if you're going to, you know, allow certain shots, and, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if you're, you know, it's Conor Gallagher 20 yards out on his left foot and he's opening up to shoot, I don't think that's the kind of situation that is going to set off major alarms and you need to be kind of throwing bodies on the floor. It's easy to say in hindsight, yeah, Villa should have closed out better, but you know, sometimes you do, honestly, you probably just have to put your hands up and say, you know, fair enough, that's a great goal. And yes, we did certainly invite him to shoot. I'm not saying that. And yeah, if you kind of look back at it, we could have got a bit closer. But yeah, as I was kind of saying, that, you know, if your kryptonite in games is going to be players approaching the 20-yard box, opening the body up like Thierry Henry and bending it like into the side net on their left peg, it's like, I mean, you kind of have to just hold your hands up. And it is frustrating, and I think it's frustrating in the context of the first goal. And as you say, it was a bit sloppy. And I think, yeah, that kind of the hesitancy that you then see around Villa Park and the Nerds is because of what we've been speaking about. We've seen this movie before. We've seen it just a few weeks ago. And so it is because of past experiences. And we know that, yeah, we do have a tendency to make these experiences harder than we should do. But I think he, equally, like, you know, I don't want to give Villa a kind of free pass. This is one of the games that for me really should open eyes as to just what we're going for by approaching the top four here. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely.
If we're going to be in the Champions League next season, and I'm kind of stood here going, yeah, you know, if, you know, by and large, we should be okay letting players run at the box and open their left foot and try and bear one in the side netting. Like, you can get away with that maybe in the Premier League, but we're, like, genuinely, when we're talking, you know, we were talking about Mbappe earlier on in the podcast, like, those are no longer kind of hyperbole. Like, that could be reality next season. And you can't concede goals at the first one. And then if you're playing in the Champions League, almost every team has players, several players with the capability to score goals, like Conor Gallagher did in that second goal. So yeah, it's one where I do feel for Villa a little. It's a fantastic goal. And I do think we have to kind of hold our hands up and admit that. But equally, there is that flip side to it, mate, whereby this isn't going to buy next season in European football. And, you know, we don't want it to be something that we're learning on the fly. We want to be there and be as prepared as possible. So, yeah, you just have to hope that these are learning experiences. But I'm kind of with you more than anything else, mate. I don't think it is the end of the world. I think a point is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, we even had that same issue with in terms of like clinicalness in that Lille game, didn't we? It's funny, yeah. Like when I can't remember who it was that scored the goal for them. Was it Remy Cabella in the away leg? Literally, like, I was sat next to my mate Sam, and he goes, "I've not got a good feeling about this, bro. Like, these lot are going to beat us, or they're going to do something." And I went, "Sam, shut up. They've not even had a shot." And as soon as I said shot, they literally shot and scored from their first shot on target in the game. But that's the difference in these games, isn't it? You know, the teams are going to come. We're going to go to teams. They're going to be clinical and take their chances because, you know, as we're going to talk about in a bit, big semi-final, mate, a lot on the line here. We're a scalp for these teams, even for Chelsea. This was like a cup final for Chelsea. They were so happy when they scored. That's, you know, I mean, that just demonstrates how far they've fallen. But also how impressive we've been, mate, genuinely. So it is almost like a reminder to ourselves to sort of, it is a bit of perspective. You know, we should take the rough with the smooth, but also the players need to realise, and I'm sure they do, you know, where they're at, what they're fighting for. And, you know, we've not got too many games left now. So let's try and end the season on a high. The game was almost, I mean, it was marred with all refereeing decisions, but it would have been a terrible evening for all should that third goal have been given. Now, as soon as that ball went over Diego's head, I could tell he was fouled instantly. Ref obviously doesn't give it. And then when you look back on the VAR, it looks, and maybe it's just a slow-mo and all that, it looks nowhere near as, not bad, because I didn't think it looked bad anyway. It doesn't necessarily have to be bad for it to be a foul either, which is, I think, something that the sort of online community are struggling to understand with this one. The Chelsea fans clearly feel very, they feel robbed, don't they, essentially, of 3 points because of that decision. But although it wasn't the hardest push, Diego was going to win that header had Badiashile not made any contact whatsoever. The contact that he made was enough to put him off. It was deemed a foul. As I said, in the moment, I thought it was a foul. Therefore, the goal was thankfully, correctly disallowed. On the rare occasion as well where the referee's overruled himself after looking it on the monitor, mate. What were your thoughts on that?
I think that point you just made of what would happen without it and without the contact, and I don't want to kind of say that, you know, we should consider that with all contact. I understand that contact is a kind of point of the game, but particularly I think when it's a shoulder in the back of a defender who's blindsided, who then goes on to kind of hash the clearance, I think that's, I understand, yeah, honestly, I can kind of see why, you know, Chelsea fans are annoyed. Like, I kind of, it comes back to that clear and obvious angle, and whether it meets that threshold is that's tough. And I would genuinely say that, because it's not like, you know, you put Diego on the deck or anything like that. It's relatively minimal contact. But as you say, I think it's enough. Yeah, given that it's a shoulder into the back, Diego is perhaps not expecting it and then kind of gets himself in trouble as a result. I am and I understand that I'm biased, I'm okay with the decision. But I do think it's one where to kind of flip the script. Is it clear and obvious? Like, is it a glaring miss? I don't think so, but I'm okay with the decision. I think it's right, and obviously, needless to say, I'm very glad that it came. But you know, we got out of there with the point, and we were lucky to do so. You know, Robbie Marston makes a great save, kind of a few seconds before that. It was coming, and you know, we kind of need to avoid getting ourselves in this situation. But yeah, the decision I think is the right one.
Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. But I think the big news has today really been off the pitch, hasn't it, mate? You know, a couple of hours ago we had the news that three Premier League teams had voted against a wage cap. Now, I mean, what that means, I'm pretty sure you need 14 votes out of the 20 to actually get something through, don't you? So like, it looks like this wage cap will be going through regardless of Villa's stance on it. Obviously, we voted against it. It's interesting, mate, because like, what are we cooking? What is up Villa's sleeve to make us think that we shouldn't have our revenue cap? And I think, you know, it's important to preface, it's 4 to 5 times the TV money, isn't it? That's what they're saying the cap is. So, you know, I think the minimum you get is 150, depending on where you finish. And obviously that scales up where you finish. And I mean, it seems like a lot of money, and it also seems like how many I mean, I guess it depends over the length as well. I mean, maybe you can enlighten me there, mate, but it seems like a lot of the teams won't necessarily hit that threshold, maybe not with transfer fees, but in terms of wages, quite possibly, with all of that sort of taken into account. But I think my main takeaway was, what commercial deals has Chris Heck got coming for us to, you know, not want to be sort of tied down?
So this is really interesting, and I'll kind of run through what's kind of going on here. So yeah, there's this salary cap, which is a really good turnaround. We only kind of heard about it maybe the back end of last week, and then there was a vote today, same hotel in London as always, and it's going to be voted on officially at the AGM in June. But clubs were kind of sounded out about this, and what it means is that, so the anchor of this deal is what the bottom club in terms of earnings from broadcast TV money the previous season made. And as you rightly say, mate, it was put to clubs that the most that a club could then spend would be 4.5 times that amount. So I've got the numbers here. So last season, the club would have been Southampton. They earned just 103.6 million of TV and broadcast money. That's pennies. And so if you times that by the 5 that's been agreed for this season, it would have put the salary cap at £518 million. And so I think the first thing to preface here is that it's not a radical change, because if you had applied it to this season, with clubs having no knowledge that this was coming, you'd assume only one club would have broken that salary cap, and it would have been, to nobody's surprise, Chelsea. They spent £539 this season on transfer fees, agent payments, wages, stuff like that, came into £539 million. The next closest team, unsurprisingly, Manchester City, at £501 million. So whilst they're close, they've still got a £17 million buffer. And so if we give Villa's context, we're way down at £250 million. So we could more than double our current spend and still sit within the existing salary cap. It'd be interesting to see kind of what happens for next season, because it will be Sheffield United, you assume, who are going to be anchoring that. We'll wait and see just how much they earned last season to see what we can spend. But you're looking at it based on the numbers, you can't imagine it's going to have a huge impact on Villa. It's very interesting that we were one of the clubs to reject it. Manchester City, Chelsea and Man United were the other clubs, the top three spenders. So you understand why it's in their interest. Man United spent £453 million on those wages, transfer fees, etc. this season. So Yeah, it's interesting that we now consider ourselves amongst those big boys. Interesting that Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs, all of those teams, no interest in it whatsoever. And so, yeah, it's very interesting kind of in that context. But whilst it's not a radical change, I do think this is a good thing. What this means is that it should, in theory, put some restrictions on just the ever-expanding nature of the Premier League expenditure these days, in which it just goes up and up and up with seemingly no kind of cap. This does put one in place. And whilst it's not necessarily a hard line that's going to stop that increase, as you said, if the TV money just increasing, even the bottom club will see their income continue to increase, thus increasing the salary cap. It regulates it to some extent. And I think in that sense, it's a good thing.
It's almost the death of profit and sustainability, isn't it? And I mean, I guess... Yeah. You know, if you're Nottingham Forest, Everton, whoever else is going to be charged or is in the process of being charged, you're not going to be very happy. And I don't know, because I mean, profit and sustainability, you know, you can say it's there to sort of protect the club. It's not really. It's not. Forest aren't going to go out of business because they spent an extra 20 million quid. It's to sort of maintain the status quo. And I guess if you're a glass half full guy, you're going to look at this and think that a promoted team, should they have a sizable cash injection from ownership or you know, whatever that may be, can perhaps give the Premier League a bit of a fairer crack at it. But I mean, even then, you probably do end up in a Nottingham Forest-esque situation with like 75 first team players and you've spent half a billion quid and you know that you can't get rid of them. So I guess there are going to be issues, but yeah, it's interesting to see how we voted on this. I think stuff like this, and like I'm probably in a minority here, but I think things like this are the only time I would sort of sit here and say that I would like Christian Perslow representing Aston Villa in these kind of meetings. I think he, like with this kind of stuff, not only had sort of our best interest, but I think just the league, like the better interest for the league as well, given his experience. And yeah, I don't know, maybe that's not a popular thing, but Chris Heck had a lot to do to win me over, let's just put it that way. And I was no big Christian Perslow fan either. I mean, you know, mate, unsigned listeners of the podcast will know. I'm no Christian Perslow stan at all.
He was very astute in these situations, though, wasn't he, mate? And I think you make a good point there in that. Yeah, it's the one thing that I will say is, you know, whilst, you know, Villa's seemingly bottomless pit of money, you know, we have to remain and keep face here. You know, we've all been kind of criticizing Chelsea and Manchester City over the years for just spending kind of at will, and it genuinely seems like Villa want to put themselves in that tier, which is obviously very exciting, but we do also have to kind of consider that, you know, we don't want to be, you know, the enemy that we've all kind of cursing for so long. And so I think we all want to see Villa do this the right way. We don't just want to see kind of Villa just go into this thing, throw millions and millions at a completely unsustainable project. I think there's a way in which we'd all like to see Villa win, and we'd like to see it done with some kind of sense of continuity. And yeah, I think continuity is the right word. Like if we want to go on and win, we kind of played Chelsea, and I want to see Villa win and Leipzig with a squad and a club and a team that I recognise.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's great that we're still seeing John McGinn barrel out about the pitch for Villa. And I think it's kind of stories like that. And I want to go and win the Conference League, and I want to see John McGinn lift it. And it's like, you know, Thiago Silva's announced that he's leaving Chelsea today. And it's like almost every week, like, their team just looks more and more unrecognizable. And if they go on and win things, it's like, you know, who's the player? Like, who are they, you know, adoring as they go on to lift the trophy? Like, I think we want to see Villa do this a certain way. And whilst it's very exciting and it's great to see that the owners are very seemingly committed to putting their money where their mouth is, and, you know, they've made a promise to this club and we're seeing it happen in real time, that they're willing to go and carry it out. Yeah, I think there's a right way to do it, and I think the salary cap is a step in the right direction, not just for Villa but for all clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how it goes and how certain fan bases take that. But yeah, mate, we've got a massive game coming up. Conference League semi-final first leg, Olympiacos at home. I have a horrible feeling that this two-legged tie is going to go sort of similarly to how the last two-legged tie went, and there's going to be plenty to play for out in Piraeus, not Athens, as people keep saying. We are going to Athens twice. I mean, first of all, we're not even going once. Piraeus is 25 minutes outside of Athens. But this is going to be really tough. And I think, you know, a certain, you know, type of fan will sort of look at Olympiacos and go, ah, well, that'll be sort of easy. But then there will be another type of fan that looks at their squad and goes, oh, wow, they've got Gelson Martins. They've got Stefan Jovetic, streets won't forget. Daniel Podence always seemed to score against us. Omar Richards, you know, Nottingham Forest player on loan. You've got someone like Vicente Ibora, a player Unai Emery will know, inside out, anchoring their midfield. This is going to be really tough, mate. This is going to be really tough. And I think there's only been one occasion away from home in Europe where we've looked extremely convincing, and that was the win against AZ Alkmaar, which, you know, that was probably one of the better European nights that we've had, even at home. Absolutely sort of rolled them over, didn't we? But this is going to be really tough at home. Lessons learned from the last tie against Lille, mate. Win your game, keep a clean sheet. That is all I ask for. I know I'm asking for a lot. The clean sheet is the more important thing. Even if we draw this, clean sheet, there's going to be so much on the line at their place, and I'm not looking forward to it one bit. But the end, you know, the light is at the end of the tunnel, mate. We're very nearly at the end of what has been a grueling but extremely rewarding Europa Conference League campaign. Like, you don't get this far to bow out now. You have to go and win the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, I was having this conversation the other day, and, you know, that I was kind of saying that if there's one thing that we can guarantee about this semi-final is that it won't be easy. Even, you know, as we've been saying on podcast, even if it should be easy, in the end, it definitely won't be.
Yeah.
You know, in this Villa team, we will make this hard for ourselves if we are to get through. But they were kind of saying that, yeah, but like 180 minutes against Olympiacos, like, it's hard not to fancy yourself in that situation. Like, at least you've not got the jeopardy of a one-off game. And it's kind of like, I genuinely don't know, like, with this Villa team, like, what I would rather have. Like, if it was like 90-minute game on the line, let's lock in and get this done, would I fancy Villa more than 180 minutes where, as you say, there's just more, like, you know, even if we go into the away leg with a 2-goal lead and we have to take that to, like, back to Greece, like, are we totally comfortable in that situation? Like, can we go there and do that and seek that out without making it hard for ourselves? Like, I mean, kind of to say no. And so, it will be really difficult. It really, really difficult. But I mean, look, it's a semi-final of a European competition at Villa Park. Like, it's what dreams are made of. It really is. It's an amazing opportunity against a very good side. They've played very well in this Conference League today. They've overcome some big teams, kind of, as we have. I know Fenerbahce have kind of got a lot going on at the moment, but they got through there and they got it done and had to come back to do it. I think that's kind of the important part. I think they went 2-0 down in that first leg and then came back to win it 3-2. And so, yeah, it's one where they clearly have a lot about them. They're clearly a side that we can't take lightly. But, yeah, it's a game in which, as I keep saying, you know, if we're going to consider ourselves serious and we want to make ourselves a mainstay on the European stage in not even kind of, what, 6 months' time, if we do, and I'd say this with all my fingers crossed, if we do get ourselves into the Champions League, Olympiacos suddenly, like, goes away from being a, this is tough potential banana skin. You know, we've got to be really at it to get past these boys to this is an absolutely must-win game, and there's no other, like, we have to be making light work of this. And so, yeah, if we do want to consider ourselves big dogs on this stage in this kind of competition, then I think we have to execute these games and prove that we're kind of worthy of this. The Lille were a much better side, and I still maintain that the winners of that competition will come from that game, and it's encouraging to know that we are that side. But yeah, we have to just go that one step further, and it's one where, again, we're going to have to take it away from home to get it done. But we should do this, and I don't think that's controversial to say.
No, absolutely, mate, absolutely. And I think the thing is as well, we're without Emmy, regardless of the injury, obviously suspended just due to the shenanigans that happened in that game. Hopefully Yuri will be back as well, but I mean, it doesn't look great. There was a sort of poorly translated report that kind of alluded to him being fined for the Euros, which to me suggests that it's still an extended period of time out. He'll just be fine come the end of June. And I mean, that could even be just this week or next week that he's out for. But, you know, until we hear more from the club on that, I guess we don't know. But it's easy to forget, mate, Olympiakos' European journey this season started in the Europa League, and they were in West Ham's group. They had Freiburg as well. Obviously, they finished third. They dropped into the Conference League. So this is a big matchup. This is two heavyweights of the competition. And, you know, they beat West Ham at home. West Ham did win their home game as well, to be fair. Obviously, they crashed out, so they didn't have a great campaign. But it's something to consider, especially as well, West Ham were seconds away from beating the most informed team in Europe right now, weren't they, mate, in Bayer Leverkusen. It took like a 93rd minute Frimpong equaliser for them to save their unbeaten record, which, I mean, thank God, because could you imagine your only loss of the season comes to West Ham in a season where you've won the league and you've, you know, you've ended Bayern Munich's monopoly of the Bundesliga, you lose to West Ham and David Moyes. That would be awful. But, you know, these are not going to be a pushover, mate. And that, I think, it just worries me. I think at Villa Park, I know anything can happen. I would back us at home, even with Robin Olsen in goal, even with whoever it is in midfield, whether it's Tim, whether we play Musah and Bailey, and things are just shifted about, and it's more of the sort of 4-4-2 that we've seen at times. I do fancy us in this game. You can't not, as you said, mate, whoever won the bout against Lille has to go and win the whole thing, don't they?
Yes, and I think the one thing that we do have, mate, is that, you know, if we're going to spin kind of all the conversation we've just had recently, the Chelsea game, the Lille games and everything like that, is that we certainly won't underestimate this game internally, which, you know, if we'd have come back on the back of, you know, several wins in a row and everything like that, then maybe there would have been a chance of that. But because it's been a bit more of a grind in recent games, you'd hope that if at Bodymore, we know that this isn't a write-off, that, you know, we've got to be on it if we want to get to that final.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The eyes are firmly on the prize, and we can rest assured Unai Emery will not sleep until he knows that we are fully prepared for this game. And that's all that matters at the end of the day. So guys, let us know your thoughts and score prediction in the comment section down below. Dan and I would really appreciate that. If you guys listen on Apple and Spotify, make sure you follow, download, share with a friend. It all helps more than you guys could imagine. And if you're on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.